afternoon, everyone. Welcome to our April 17th Core MPO Technical Coordinating Committee meeting. We will start things off with the approval of the agenda. Please, we will start. Can I get a motion? There's how we start.
Kayla Brown, I'll make a motion to approve the agenda.
Second, Michelle Strickland.
Approved and seconded. Can we start the vote to my left and please state your name and your affiliation?
Senator, yes.
Strickland, yes.
Brown, yes.
Moskowitz, yes.
Holm, yes.
Byrne, yes.
Wilson, yes.
Brooks, yes. Thank you. Moving into our action items for today, first we have approval of the February 20th meeting minutes.
So moved.
Second, Strickland.
All right. Start the votes to my right.
Byrne, yes.
Holm, yes.
Moskowitz, yes.
Brown, yes.
Strickland, yes.
Senator, yes.
Wilson, yes.
Brooks, yes. All right, and then we will go into the TIP amendments for April.
Okay, good afternoon, everyone. I'll be giving the TIP amendment report. Okay, so we did receive several TIP amendment requests in March. So Chatham County requested TIP amendments for several projects, including Chevis Road, Garrett Avenue, I-16, at SR-17, and we will be outlining the summary of those proposed changes throughout this report. Additionally, the Georgia Department of Transportation has made some language changes to the STIP and TIP amendment process, and those details are also in this report. Okay, so moving into public participation, we have sent this out for public review. We just have not received comment on that yet, but the public comment period does end on April 23rd, so there's still time to submit comment. And then these are just the general changes to the TIP that are proposed, but I'll get into the more specific changes, which is in the next few pages. So for the Chevis Road improvement project, Chatham County requested an update to the local fund cost estimate for the right-of-way phase of fiscal year 2025, changing the estimate from $468,000 in local funds to $466,000. Additionally, the construction phase will be moved from fiscal year 2027 to fiscal year 2028, and those are those changes reflected. So the 2027 funds, they haven't disappeared. They're just being moved into another fiscal year that's not in this current TIP. So for the Garrett Avenue improvement project, Chatham County has requested to add an additional local match of $1.3 million to the right-of-way phase of fiscal year 2026. And also the addition of a utility phase totaling $678,000 was also requested. For this project, it was also requested to add the addition of local funds in fiscal year 2026 totaling to $152,000. And here are those changes reflected from in the current TIP to the updated TIP. And then for I-16 at SR-17, Chatham County requested an additional $11,300 to the right-of-way phase of fiscal year 2025. And a request was also made to add $1.6 million to the utility phase of fiscal year 2027, and then $43 million in the construction phase of fiscal year 2027. And then here are those changes reflected here. And for the STIP and TIP amendment process update, so there were some language changes. They are highlighted in red here. So specifically, a new requirement was added for the administrative modification process for the STIP and TIP amendment or modification process. So it was added for non-federal funded phases, adding a project phase that utilizes 100% non-federal funding that does not impact fiscal constraint, federal share match, and air quality. So this is just a new specification under when you should do an administrative modification versus a whole TIP amendment. And then these are the new the new language for specifically doing a TIP or STIP amendment, and it was just a few words added. So the addition of a new project or addition of a phase with federal funds to an existing project. So that with federal funds was the only new part for this sentence. Going into the appendix, this is just showing the project pages. So the original and then the updated with those updated numbers and updated notes for each project. And then also, this is the full text for the Georgia or the Georgia Department of Transportation STIP and TIP amendment process. So this is the original full text, and then this is the new full text with the new requirements or the new wording. These are just the public involvement materials, and then in terms of the consistency check with the MTP, these are consistent with the 2050 MTP. And so here's the table to reflect that. And then this was just communication and coordination on this TIP amendment. But that is the end of the report. Are there any questions, or would anyone like to look at the TIP amendment tables in more detail? I can scroll back up to them just to make sure they're accurate. Oh, and this is an action item, so we will be asking for an endorsement of the TIP amendments.
If no one has any questions on the TIP amendments, can we get a motion to endorse?
So moved, Strickland.
Second, Holm.
All right. We'll start to my left.
Senate, yes.
Proctor, yes.
Strickland, yes.
Brown, yes.
Moskowitz, yes.
Holm, yes.
Byrd, yes.
Wilson, yes.
Brooks. Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Up next, we've got the participation plan.
Okay, that is also my item. So we have made some changes to the participation plan. And let me actually go open this one. Okay, this should be filled with more text, but I'll just go into the participation plan specifically. So we did receive some language updates to the STIP and TIP amendment process. And so the STIP and TIP amendment process is also detailed in the participation plan here, or I believe on the, I think it's in Appendix J, but I can scroll to that. But the STIP and TIP amendment process that I discussed in the previous amendment or the previous TIP amendments, that text was also updated in the participation plan. And so because that text was updated in the participation plan and it involved an amendment process, which also involves our participation plan and our transportation and equity and public involvement advisory committee, it kind of created a kind of gray area in terms of when we should execute doing that 45-day public comment and review period, or when it should just be just an internal modification to the document. And so we sent this language update out to the TPAC to discuss this and see and clarify when we should do an administrative modification versus a full-on amendment process that involves TPAC and involves that 45-day public and comment review period. And so we added this new language to that to kind of clarify when we should do just a minor modification, which doesn't necessarily involve review by TPAC just because we're updating some language, versus when we should do a major modification, and that involves our amendment process, and that's just because it involves changing the way the core MPO functions in terms of the participation process, or the way that the transportation equity and public involvement advisory committee functions in terms of that process. So this is the highlighted text that we added to try to clarify that. And so what we are asking for is an endorsement of these changes to the participation plan, but then also based on the text, is this clear in terms of when we should do a major modification, or I guess the definition of a major modification, which will lead to a 45-day public comment and review period versus a minor one, which does not involve that public comment review period. And so yeah, if there are any questions or comments, or if this maybe needs to be updated with different language, then please let me know.
Are there any comments for Asia on the participation plan? All right. Do we need to endorse this one also?
Yes, this would be an endorsement.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Brown, I make a motion to endorse.
Second, Moskowitz.
Okay. We'll start to my right.
Bird, yes.
Holm, yes.
Moskowitz, yes.
Brown, yes.
Strickland, yes.
Proctor, yes.
Senator, yes. Wilson, yes.
Brooks, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Asia. All right. Seeing as there's no other business, we will move into status reports. Up first, we have TMA certification.
Before WACOTA gets started, I just want to take a moment to just thank everybody for participating in this TMA process. We got incredible results. We had no findings. Everything went very well, but a lot of it happened because of all of you, as well as the incredible team that I have working with me here at the MPC and the MPO. So I did want to make sure that I thank you all and your elected officials for participating in this process.
Yeah, thank you for participating also with the public meeting and advisory meeting with FHW and FTA. The agenda for the certification review actually includes a presentation from FHW FTA to TCC and CompU board, but because of the current change in current situation, they cannot travel. They cannot give the presentation here. So we will just update you that we received this certification letter. So we are certified for another 4 years. That means federal transportation investment dollars will continue to come to our area. And then there's also a report included. I think we made tremendous progress. For the previous certification review, we actually got more than 20 recommendations. For this one, we got about 5 accommodations and then about 6 recommendations. So we will be working with all of you and to address these recommendations. So I would just mention part of it is this performance-based planning programming. So they want us to develop our own performance measures, especially when we updated our congestion management process. So we have the congestion data and then the freight improvement plan. We also have the freight performance measures. So they want us to start to develop those. And also we're going to have like bicycle pedestrian facility study. So we might have a local bicycle and pedestrian data. So we will develop some performance measures for those. Another one is the transportation improvement program. And this is the something that we also want to work with because they want us to, because for the long range transportation plan, remember we have a very robust revenue development and financial plan. But for the TIP, normally we just got the revenue projection from GDOT. But where do those numbers come from? It's a black box to us. So we would like to get some transparency from GDOT Financial Management Office as well. So we will work with GDOT on this one. And congestion management process, this is probably because of the different requirements. Before City Loop, CMP is supposed to be a standalone document. But after that, CMP can be a part of the MPO's planning process. So their recommendations, you don't have to do a standalone document anymore. You need to just incorporate it as a chapter in your future MTP. And the financial planning, this is also for, this is actually for the revenue projections. And then the tip one, sorry about that, is the obligated project lists, because we normally publish the annual listing of obligated projects, on our website. So it seems like sometimes we have GDOT sends us highway, but we sometimes get the transit, but sometimes we don't. So we normally get the transit and highway during the TIP development process. But if the annually, so we have to establish some kind of process so that we can coordinate with CAD. And then we also standardize like a year to year. This is the standard format. So we will work on that. That one is easy fix. And then also the transit planning. So they want us to develop standard operating procedure. So especially because we have a lot of problem with the water ferry. So it's like nobody knows where we start, where we go. So we will develop that and with CAT and in coordination with GDOT and FHWA and FDA. And then we will develop a schedule and probably a point of contact. So this would be, seems like this would be very, very easy fix, but we will start to work on this. So this is just a report, status report to you. Congratulations to all of us. And then the next one, I would just go with the fiscal year 2026 UPWP. At the last meeting, TCC endorsed the fiscal year 2026 UPWP with the condition that there might be some wordsmithing because of the new administration change. So we eventually got some guidance from FHWA and FTA. We had a quarterly coordination meeting. This is what they told us. They said, okay, we will certify your UPWP, but you need to make certain changes. The first part is revise the planning emphasis area language. So anything that says FHWA and FTA encourage the MPOs to do like equity planning or environmental justice, no, remove all of that. So MPOs are doing the environmental justice, seems like on our own initiative. So remove any reference to FHW and FTA. And so something like that. And then also remove all the reference to BIL. So bipartisan, they don't like the word bipartisan. So bipartisan infrastructure legislation, just remove that. So just to say IIJA. Jobs Act. So we remove that and also removes the old executive orders that have been canceled by the new president. So 1-3 and basically that's the related to equity planning and environmental justice. So we, remove that language. And also, since we adopted the UPWP in February, and then we finalized the document in March, that actually staff did more work after, so we documented all of that, and also we validate all of the information, all of the edits, like a roster change. We also have roster changes just between those 2 months. So we just validated all of the information throughout the document and just made necessary edits. So they did, FHW did encourage us to just to give you a status update on this and let you know that we will schedule a workshop for future year UPWPs because we need to find out what words to use, like maybe the equity planning can be changed to community planning or something. So Asia has already developed a file to track maybe the suggested word changes. We also got some information from AMPO that we can have some words missing, but we will work with you. But if we still want to pursue justice, environmental justice, equity, we can still keep those in, but we might just use different languages. Okay, thank you.
Any questions, comments? Up next, 2050 MTP website updates.
Hi, everyone. Good afternoon. Anna Broadmark-Macquarie, Core MPO staff. So I wanted to update you all on the website for the 2050 Metropolitan Transportation Plan Moving Forward Together website. So we finished the visual executive summary and created a story map of the financial plan projects with an interactive project map. The visual executive summary will be translated into our LEP, our limited English proficiency languages, within the coming months. So both of these are available on our website. So if you go to Moving Forward Together 2050, you can get to the visual executive summary here. You can also download it from the agenda. And then you can go to the story map as well and scroll through it. I'm just going to jump down to the financial plan project list. So you can pick on a project. It should have a little pop-up here, and it'll hyperlink to the project page. So that's a great interactive tool for us and the public as well to know what projects we have going on in the area. It also details a little bit about our public engagement process. Okay, does anyone have any questions about that?
Thank you, Anna.
Perfect.
Next is the non-motorized transportation plan status update.
I will be giving that report as well. So let me just
Open. So staff is continuing work on the non-motorized transportation plan. And in March, we did have a meeting with the steering committee and then also members of TPAC and BPAC to discuss the scoring method for the projects. And so during that discussion, what we heard back from the group was that safety, connectivity, funding, and quality of life were probably the most important factors to include in that evaluation criteria. So based on that feedback, Core MPO staff developed this scoring criteria that has three major categories, so safety, connectivity, and quality of life. And so in that is crash data, existing sidewalk, and then grocery stores, healthcare, schools, and transit. And then because we heard safety, or I guess the concern for safety so much during the meeting, we also added weights to the scoring criteria. So safety would be the highest weighted part of the score. And then for the bicycle criteria, it's mostly the same, except we have this extra category for facility protection. So we want to really highlight those projects that have some type of separated facility. We did receive comment from the steering committee that share rows, which appear they currently have an automatic 1 point. Some people believe it should be 0 points. And that's just because share rows can kind of create problems if they're created in the wrong conditions. And so out of an abundance of caution, some members of the steering committee feel that the share rows should get an automatic point of 0 just because we want to deprioritize share rows and prioritize the protected and separated bicycle facilities. So to address that, I believe what staff can do is do the scoring criteria as shown here, but then subtract points from the share rows, and then we can see the difference between the share row project points with the automatic 1 point. And then also the project and priority list where those points are removed in the safety category. But that is the end of this update. But if there are any questions or comments, I can take them now.
I just have one. I am curious on the definition of grocery store and if that will kind of make things, you know, scored more highly if they're next to a real grocery store versus a place that just serves food or sells food like a convenience store or something, you know, and thinking about access for people to food and different things.
But mm-hmm. So in terms of grocery store, there wasn't a specific definition of like it has to be like a Kroger or a Walmart. So I actually created that layer, and what I did was I essentially used Google Maps to plot everywhere where there was a major or minor grocery store. So some of them might are more on the side of convenience store, and then others might be like a super Walmart, for example. But there's not necessarily that distinction in this scoring criteria. It is kind of all one flat definition where they're all kind of bundled together.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing else. Up next, we've got US 80. Quarter study phase 2 status report.
I do have a schedule attached to this one, but I am too optimistic. So we did receive two good proposals, one from Kim Nehorn, one from Pond and Company, and we completed the interview. And so we're working with the consultants team to do the negotiation. Now we're at the negotiation stage. So we hope to have the prime contract between MPC and GDOT executed probably last week. But today, as I checked, it was still in just a move up from the GDOT legal. So it's not finalized. And I have to touch base with Effingham County to see the MOU. That's for the local match because they were supposed to execute the MOU yesterday. But I haven't got any news on that one yet. So I was developing a draft contract between the potential consultant team this morning. So I have the draft contract done, but it just when we finally select the consultant and finalize the scope and fee proposals and schedules, we'll insert that language. So this April 22nd is just too optimistic. So I think the next MPC meeting April the May the 13th is our new target date for contract execution. Thank you.
Thank you, Wakoda. Up next, Urban Flood Model Phase 2 status report.
Hey, before we move on, we'll inform Wakoda. We did approve it on Tuesday night, so yep. Effingham County Board of Commissioners did they did a vote to approve that, so we'll get that to you.
MPC is on MPC's next week agenda.
Okay. Sounds good.
Hi, everyone. Anna Broad-Merkel-McCord. I'll be presenting on the Urban Flood Model Study Phase 2. So this is the similar funded study as previous two. We did pause the RFP review for 30 days from February 11th to March 11th. We reopened it and closed it again on April 4th. We did not receive any new proposals, so we just had the one from University of Georgia and Goodwin Mills Kaywood, or UGA and GMC. And the submitted proposal is currently under review. All right. So May 1st will be the interview with our applicant, and we are expecting to have the contract execution by MPC May 13th, and project will hopefully start mid-May.
Thank you, Anna. Bicycle and pedestrian facility study status report.
Okay. Similar to the two previous agenda items, this project is also funded through the discretionary planning funds, and the total amount for this project is $300,000. So $240,000 of that will be from the discretionary PO funds, and then 20% would be the local match. So some background on the study. It's an inventory and assessment study of the bike lanes, sidewalks, and crosswalks within the current PO planning area boundary. And so we've received several proposals on this project. And so the phase that we are in right now is reviewing the proposals with the scoring committee that we put together with MPO staff and then volunteers who were able to review the written proposals and then also the interviews. So from the written proposals and the interviews, we did score those, and there were several good contenders. And so the phase that we're at right now is trying to pick one of three very good applicants. So after we compiled those scores, we found that there was a very, very small, sometimes fraction of a difference between the top scoring consultant agencies. So because of that, we did send out a request for fee proposals. So that will now be an additional layer of evaluation just because the scores are so close and in some cases they were tied. We just want to be able to use that to be able to choose who we will go with to complete this project. Additionally, the prime contract between GDOT and MPC for this project was executed. And so right now, we will have another meeting to review kind of that fee proposal and the interview scores and the written proposals all together, and then use all of that information to make a selection. But right now, we're kind of having a good problem where we have a lot of good agencies who can carry out this project. Are there any questions? And I can just scroll through the schedule as well.
Thank you so much, Asia.
Mm-hmm.
Up next, the USDOT memos update.
Hi, everyone. Anna again. So we wanted to review some of the information of our USDOT, or Department of Transportation, memos and information for you all today. On January 29th, 2025, U.S. Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy signed the woke recession memorandum and the ensuring reliance upon sound economic analysis in Department of Transportation policies and programs and activities order, quote, ensuring that all U.S. DOT principles, grants, loans, and actions are based on sound economic principles, positive cost-benefit analyses, and pro-economic growth priorities. So in the memo, it does state that it will prioritize to the extent practical, relevant, appropriate, and consistent with the law, mitigate the unique impacts of DOT programs, policies, and activities on families and family-specific difficulties, such as the accessibility of transportation to families with young children, and give preference to communities with marriage and birth rates higher than the national average. So we just want to make sure that all of our members are aware of information and keeping up with it. We have not received any further direction on this or any more information. However, it's better to stay informed. So we did map out the marriage and birth rates in our MPO planning area using data from the American Community Survey 2023 five-year data table for the percentage of married people. And I'll show you the map in just a moment, but here are the numbers. So we can see that there are higher in some municipalities than others. So Tybee Island has the highest with 65.8. And then Garden City and City of Savannah probably have the lowest at 31.4%. And I believe this is percentage of the municipality. And then for birth rates, we use the general fertility rate for females aged 15 through 44 in Georgia using the Georgia Department of Public Health Online Analytical Statistical Information System, or OASIS, mapping tool. And this is by county. So you can see the GFR there for Bryan, Chatham, and Effingham County. They're pretty similar. Okay, so we'll go to the maps. All right, so we'll go to birth rate map first. So you can see here the whole state, dark purple is going to be the highest birth rate, where lilac or light purple is going to be the lowest. You can tell, and at least on the coast, those areas surrounding Fort Stewart have higher birth rates. And then here we are. This is a zoomed in version of our planning area as well. So we can tell we're about average for the state. So when we look at marriage population in our area, so here where it's on the yellow to brown or red scale, it's done by place, you can see the yellow is going to be the lowest, whereas that dark red or brown is going to be the highest. We see the higher marriage rates or percent of married people in the islands communities, and then some in Effingham and closer to that in Bloomingdale. And then if we want to look at this by census tract to give us a better idea, instead of grouping, for example, Savannah all as one place, it's by census tract, where yellow is the lowest percent of now married people and dark blue is the highest. And one more for you all to look at. This is from the CDC National Center for Health Statistics. If you're just curious how our area compares with the rest of Georgia, this has some health statistics for you. So fertility rate, we're right about there. This is, they have the marriage rate instead of the percent by place. So it's a little bit different. Just keep in mind. And they have a little bit more information for you if you are interested to look at it. And also attached, is the signed DOT order, if you would like to read the text for yourself. Again, we haven't received any other updates, but we are making sure that we're all aware of the situation and how it's evolving.
So I see you made the maps to PDF. Is it possible to have shape files of those, or ways we can? Okay.
Yeah, we can share those. Mm-hmm. And I can also show you the data tools where we downloaded them if you want to download them straight from the website, or I'll give them to you.
Any other questions for Anna? All right.
Thank you so much. Up next, the Federal Lands Access Program.
All right. So I wanted to update you all on the Federal Lands Access Program, or FLAP, which its goal is to improve transportation facilities that provide access to, are adjacent to, or are located within federal lands. The fiscal years 27 to 29 call for projects was announced in January of this year, but is currently on hold as of February. However, during this hold, should the program come back, I think it's a great time for our members to consider projects that could be selected for this program. All right. So they're looking for proposed projects or studies that must be associated with public highway, road, bridge, trail, or transit system that is located on, is adjacent to, or provide access to federal lands for which the transportation facility's title or maintenance responsibility is vested with a state, county, city, township, tribal, municipal, or other local government entity. We have heard from previous GAMPO meetings that this money was pretty easy if you had a good project. So I looked at our different federal lands in the area. I think Fort Pulaski National Monument would probably be the easiest target, so anything relating to that. We also have the Savannah and Wausau National Wildlife Refuges, which have restricted access. Savannah Hilton Head International Airport has some federal land, and then Fort Stewart Hunter Army Airfield. However, those are closed access, but I do believe that Fort Stewart has a sportsmanship type program where people can come on, come into the installation. So if it is open access, it's available for this program. You can visit the website here, and we do have a map, another map. Here we go. Just to demonstrate where these lands are. Typically, they're looking for projects within 10 miles. That's going to cover the entire county. So as long as it provides access to those federal lands, it can qualify, whether it be a trail or a road.
All right. Thank you so much, Anna. Up next, we've got the U.S. 17 corridor presentation. I think we have some folks here from Kimley Horn for that.
Good afternoon. I'm gonna let Mr. Crochet and Mr. Sofsky cover that one, but all right. One more.
Number 13.
13, there it is. There, it's kind of buried. Good deal. Is that full screen for you guys? Because it's not for me. No? How about now? Excellent. Again, good afternoon. I'm Chris Marston here with Kimley Horn. Appreciate the opportunity to come speak to you all this afternoon to cover our current status on the State Route 25 U.S. 17 corridor study, and to give you some idea of some of the proposed recommendations as we prepare to present these findings and recommendations to the board. The plan is to have that presentation next week, so we would appreciate any input from this board or from the TCC prior to presenting to the board. Just a real quick introduction of the team. You've probably seen us all before. That we have been before the TCC before presenting the existing condition summary. I'll go into that a little bit as a recap, but what we want to spend most of the next hour talking about are the proposed improvements. No laughs, huh? Okay. It won't be an hour. Rhodes Hunt is also here with me. Rhodes is the deputy project manager on the project, and I think everybody knows Denise Grabowski. She couldn't be here today, but she led the stakeholder engagement on the project for us. So again, we want to talk, give you a brief overview of the corridor today, recap some of our initial findings, and then talk about some of the study recommendations that we will be making, and then talk through the next steps. So real quick, the corridor, as you can see there, is fairly extensive. It's about 10.7 miles long, call it 11. Everybody loves it when engineers say about 10.734 miles long. We've broken that extensive length into six segments, as we presented before, that are based on the character of the segment, the typical section, the type of traffic, the volume of traffic, and those kinds of things. So those are illustrated there.
There are a number of intersections included in the study area, a great deal of traffic counting that went into the study. And as a result of that information, we developed our traffic forecast. And before we get into the details of that, I wanted to talk a little bit about where we found some of the more serious concerns. So this traffic summary map is for the AM peak hour. And as you can see in the legend there, that we've kind of simplified the coding on those intersections, basically a red, yellow, or green. Pretty simple to understand where the color red represents the level of service F, D and E are yellow, and A through C, which are typically acceptable, are colored green. The linear red areas indicate long queue areas, and then the numbered intersections are, the numbered boxes are some key observations along the corridor. I don't want to read every one of these to you. We've presented these before, but this graphic does give you a pretty good sense of where the problem areas are today in the AM peak hour. The second graphic is for the PM peak hour, and it's sort of the reverse of the AM as we would expect. We also completed a crash analysis for the corridor in between the years of 2018 and 2022, which is the extents of the data that was available at the time that we did the existing analysis. There were 3,621 total crashes. Good news in that is nearly 85% of those were property damage only. But we did see 24 fatalities in the traffic data, the crash history. Also on the bad news side, five of six segments exceeded the statewide average. And then we used some ASHTO tools to develop a cost of those crashes. And it's difficult to translate a cost or damage into a cost and to conceptualize that. But based on some of the tools that ASHTO provides, the cost of those crashes is $170.1 million. So considering all that information, there's a clear need for safety improvements along the corridor. This graphic compares the crash rates of the corridor to typical principal arterials with similar traffic characteristics. So you can see two of the segments are performing very similarly to what we see for this type of facility across the state. And the others are not. So in the way of a need summary, obviously safety improvements are a big need along the corridor. A typical tool for some of the crash types that we're seeing across the corridor are access management to eliminate conflict points. So an access management strategy is a huge need along the corridor. There are areas, of course, where capacity improvements are needed as well. And we also saw a demand for transit, pedestrian, and bicycle facilities along the corridor. Some of the stakeholder engagement that we've completed to date, I won't read all of this to you, but just know that we are down towards the bottom of this in the purple box there, our study findings of April 17th. And again, our next planned meeting is to the MPO board on the 23rd. With that, Rose Hunt is going to walk us through some of the improvements, and then we'll be happy to take any questions after that. Thank you.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. Excited to present our study recommendations to y'all this afternoon. Please consider these draft recommendations. These are kind of our first bite at the apple. So as Chris mentioned, certainly welcome y'all's feedback and input today. But we have developed both short-term and long-term recommendations for the study, short-term being defined as those between 0 and 5 years, and then long-term being more than 5 years out. So we've kind of broken them into kind of the key categories that Chris just described, the first of which is intersection improvements. So we'll start the southern end of the corridor at Bradley Boulevard. We are recommending a new traffic signal at that intersection. This intersection was one of the most highly talked about and highly sought after improvements in some of our stakeholder engagement activities that began last year. The top short-term priority that we are currently recommending is at the 204 interchange, and you'll hear more about this interchange in the next presentation as well. but we are recommending short-term capacity improvements, particularly on the westbound off-ramp, where we're recommending a free-flow U-turn to the eastbound on-ramp to head back on 204. And again, that's in direct correlation with some of the recommendations in the 204 study. Similarly, we are recommending additional improvements at Berwick Boulevard, Cottonville Road, and at Chatham Parkway. For access control, we are also recommending a corridor-wide signal retiming, basically helping to optimize some of the signal cycle links, as well as how adjacent signals can communicate with one another. We're also encouraging and recommending all the represented jurisdictions along the corridor to begin planning for a raised median throughout the study limits. This also includes beginning to implement some of those reduced conflict points that Chris described and some innovative intersection types like R-cuts or right-in, right-out driveways, again, to help that access management. So let's talk about long-term. So a couple of big ones here at the top, starting at the 204 interchange. Based on our analysis in the short term, we think that the short-term improvements are going to last us about 10 years, about 2040 or so, at which point the existing diamond is likely to reach its capacity and service life. And then at that time, we're recommending that the interchange be reconfigured to a diverging diamond, or DDI. We'll have some graphics to help illustrate what that might look like. We're also recommending a new signal at the Kroger driveway. So that driveway is between Berwick Boulevard and Cottonville Road in the Berwick community, again, helping to kind of redistribute some of the traffic in the very busy area that we see today. We're recommending a through-cut intersection at Cottonville Road. If y'all are thinking, what in the world is a through-cut? We got you covered. We'll show you what that looks like in just a minute. Similarly, we're recommending a very neat intersection, I think, called a continuous green T at Dean Forest Road, and we'll show you what that looks like in just a few slides. And then finally, at Chatham Parkway, another big one, we're recommending a quadrant roadway system with a grade separation at Chatham Parkway. For access control, a big and honestly the top priority in the long term for the corridor as a whole, we're planning to widen from 4 lanes to 6 lanes, really the southern half, beginning at Bradley Boulevard and extending all the way to Dean Forest Road. We're also, again, recommending a raised median throughout the corridor, as well as bicycle and pedestrian improvements throughout the study limits, and then in conjunction with the raised median, again, some of those innovative intersection types. So speaking of bicycle and pedestrian facilities, just want to highlight here, in accordance with the non-motorized plan recommendations, we are recommending a shared use path on both sides of the corridor. Again, kind of, you know, the preference for separated or protected facilities that have been talked about today. Again, along both sides of the corridor, beginning at Bradley Boulevard all the way through I-516. So I want to quickly show you kind of our typical section in roadway world. It's just our attempt to generally describe and illustrate the roadway cross-section throughout the corridor. So I've got two shown on the screen here. The top one is the six-lane section. So again, the southern half of the corridor beginning near Bradley Boulevard and extending through Dean Forest Road. And on the bottom is a typical four-lane section. And so you can see on the outside of the roadway where we are anticipating some widening to be needed, again, to accommodate that additional travel lane in both directions. And then the four-lane section, a lot less widening would be needed, but primarily to accommodate that raised median, which is wider than the existing two-way left turn lane. And then both typical sections do include the shared use path that's recommended along both sides. So let's get into some graphics, and I want to skip ahead to the 204 interchange. This, as I mentioned, is where we are recommending a DDI. At this interchange, we did evaluate multiple interchange types, including an expanded diamond with the six-lane section, as well as a single-point urban interchange or a SPUI. But quite frankly, the DDI performed much better than both of those. One key reason why is there's a lot of traffic that's anticipated. You can see kind of the top right corner from the Hopeton Landing development along the Little Neck Road corridor. A lot of that traffic's going to be coming south on Ogeechee Road and trying to make a left onto eastbound 204. And so the DDI really helps process that traffic very efficiently. That kind of separated this alternative from some of the others. Moving forward northward, this is the Berwick area. So you can see the Berwick Marketplace and the Kroger at the top of the screen to help orient. So right in the middle is the Kroger driveway. We are recommending the new signal there, as I mentioned. But I want to focus in on the Cottonville Road intersection, where, as I mentioned before, this is a through-cut recommendation. A through-cut is an intersection in which the through movements from the minor street so in this instance from Cottonvale, would be restricted from being able to go across the major roadway, or in this case, State Route 25, and would be forced to make a right or a left turn rather than being able to go through. And this is particularly effective when those minor street or the minor street through movements are very low, and it really helps to enhance the signal operations at that intersection. Bless you. So moving forward, this is at Dean Forest Road. This is where we're recommending the continuous green T. I really like this type of intersection. So in this instance, the northbound traffic, so kind of on the beginning on the left side of the screen, moving to your right, that traffic would be able to go free flow through the intersection. So it would not be under signal control. The only signalization would be for the northbound left turns. Obviously, those are opposing the southbound traffic, which would be signalized as is today. An interesting fact about this intersection is it's a little bit more extensive improvements than what we recommended back in 2022 when we completed the State Route 307 corridor study. Quite frankly, there's more traffic than anticipated back then. The growth rates are anticipated to be higher than back in 2022, even with that data. And so that necessitated more extensive improvements at this intersection. All right, almost done. So at Chatham Parkway, this is another a big recommendation. It's called a quadrant roadway system. So in this instance, the existing signal at the Chatham Parkway intersection would be removed in lieu of four new signals in the southwest and the northeast quadrants, which would utilize what we call quadrant systems along Wood Spring Drive and Mercy Way to accommodate all existing turning movements, both to and from both routes. But this surprised us a little bit, although, as Chris said, the conditions are quite poor in both peak hours. We're thinking an at-grade solution probably would work, but as we dug into the forecasting, it was clear that we needed a grade separate both primary travel movements. And so in this example, Chatham Parkway would be elevated up and over Ogeechee Road. But another fact here, too, is we did, again, evaluate multiple interchange alternatives. But one of the key benefits of this one is it really helps to reduce and minimize property and access impacts. And the fact that there's good existing infrastructure already in place along Mercy Way and Wood Spring Drive really helps separate this alternative. All right, so last slide. So next steps, we completed our PIOH, or Public Information Open House, at the end of March. And concurrently with that, we launched an online survey to help solicit additional public input. That's going to wrap up to the public comment period at the end of April. From that input, we'll then present all of that to our stakeholder advisory team for our second stakeholder advisory team meeting around the first week of May. After that meeting, we'll then be able to finalize our project recommendations and corresponding cost estimates, all of which will then wrap up in a final report by the end of May. So with that, I will pause. Thank you again for your time. Are there any questions y'all have?
I just had a quick question. If you can go back to the continuous green T.
Yeah.
I was just wondering how, because it doesn't look like there are any pedestrian crossing opportunities at this. Would you be able to tell me how far the nearest pedestrian crossing would be? Because if we have shared use paths on both sides.
Yes.
Obviously, there isn't much right in this area, but.
Mm-hmm. So I think it's just cut off on the left side, Kayla.
Mm-hmm.
But GDOT is actually planning for a new Hawk signaler just to the west at Derrick End Road.
Okay.
You just can't see it on this image, but that's about a quarter mile to the west of
okay.
Dean Forest. So there will be a crossing opportunity there. And then an additional one east of Dean Forest Road also just cut off on
okay.
this image. So yeah, pretty close to that intersection.
Okay. Thank you.
Kayla asked one of my questions, but the other one, in earlier presentations, you had the typical design for the bus pullout. Is that still a recommendation? Yes. And okay.
Yeah, so you can actually see one of them right here on the left side of the image. They're typically associated with the R cuts, uh-huh. But there are several U-turn locations or pull-off areas recommended throughout the study limits. I think I remember you mentioning last time the microtransit demand that's planned along this route. So our intent with these is really to identify some dedicated pull off areas to allow for safer loading and unloading of passengers, try to get that transit out of the main through traffic. We heard that a lot from some of our stakeholder engagement in the public earlier in the study.
It may be beneficial to include that in part of the presentation as well.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, thank you.
I just want to make sure, because our developmental services actually had a had some questions on, so I'm so glad Kim Lehorn and VHB are both here, because it was for the properties on the northern side of Stero 204. So I think Stero 204 is a limited access roadway, so you're going to restrict limited access, but they are talking about having access to US 17 for that development between Little Neck Road and Quaker Road. So I just want to make sure that the county forward that information to both consultants for their final recommendation.
To Little Neck Road.
Between Little Neck Road, currently it's like marshland. It's on 204, but to the north of 204. So they're going to have yeah, Adam probably.
Yeah, I've got it.
Okay. I just want to mention that we want to forward that information to you.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you all very much.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Up next, we've got a State Route 204 corridor study presentation. Mr. Tommy Crochet.
Everything looking okay? Thank you for having us today. We'll try to get through this as promptly as we can so that we can get to your questions. So our agenda, kind of just go through history, some of our summary of the findings we had. We'll do this fairly quickly because this is pretty much identical to what we presented back in August. Kind of cover our short-term, long-term alternatives that have been considered and let you know where we are going with the study over the next several months. Quick background, of course, we're really just studying from US 17 to the King George Boulevard interchange. And our goals are really to reduce congestion, obviously minimize crash frequency, severity, while maintaining reasonable access to this area, especially off of the Ford Avenue and Pine Grove Drive intersections. We really kicked it off, the project, early last year, met with our key stakeholders over the summer, presented to the MPO in August, and we held a PIOH in October, had about 100 people showed up, got some good comments from them, number of which we expected, but we did get a few unexpected comments. We got back together with our key stakeholders in December and identified the alternatives that we'd move forward for a little more detailed study, and we'll present that to y'all in a few minutes. Just kind of key options here. Existing traffic out there is about 58,000 ADT daily traffic. In 2030, expect that to grow to about 65,000. And as we approach 2050, we're getting close to almost 90,000 ADT. At that point, you start to have pretty severe capacity constraints on 204, and we'll be needing to look towards adding capacity, effectively going from four lanes to six lanes. Crashes out there. Since this corridor is partially a freeway, as you look at the King George to Veterans Parkway, that's very much operating like a freeway. As you cross 17 to the west, still acts like a freeway until, of course, you get to Gateway Boulevard, then you really just are looking at a mess there. But with the signalized intersection at Pine Grove Drive and the unsignalized full median opening at Ford Avenue, you kind of have an arterial. So the crashes that exist out today are a little below the arterial average. but well above a freeway, the freeway average. Same thing with injury crashes. We did get some comments concerned about speeding on the roadway, so we went back out, collected some speed data. We found about the median speed during non-congested times of the day. We're right around 63 miles an hour. And surprisingly, eastbound, for vehicles traveling over 70 miles an hour, about 99% of the vehicles drive over 70 miles an hour eastbound. But in the westbound, that's about 2% over 70 miles an hour. So going back to the comparison of freeway and arterial, of course, arterial roadways have driveways on it, signals, those kind of things. It does better, obviously, accommodate pedestrians, crosswalks, sidewalks, and, of course, traffic signals. While a freeway, eliminates driveways, eliminates pedestrians, in a typically higher speed, and access points are controlled at usually with interchanges or, in that sense. And one thing to note, and we, it was on that previous slide, but that the crash rates and injury rates, for freeways are a good bit lower. If you look at Georgia statewide averages over the last few years, those crash rates on arterials is about triple what it is for freeways. So, freeways actually are safer from that standpoint. I'm going to let Josh cover the improvements we're considering, and the alternatives we're looking at.
Thanks, Tommy. Thanks so much for having us here to look at some of these improvements. And we had originally brought this to you back in August last year and then to the public in October. And since then, we've been able to meet with some stakeholders, hear from the public, and decide which of these alternatives we want to move forward with and which ones we're not going to continue analyzing. So the alternatives we're looking at include widening State Route 204 for that additional traffic, especially over the next 25 years, improving some of the ramp entrances and exits to really provide additional capacity and improve some of that flow, looking at closing those existing median openings because those are some of the areas where we're getting a lot of conflict points and having the large number of crashes. Also looking at adding acceleration and deceleration lanes. This was something that we heard from the public during the PIOH. They were very concerned with having to either slow down to exit the road or turning right onto the road next to high-speed traffic. So these lanes really allow people to speed up or slow down to merge or diverge with the traffic on 204. We're also looking at adding a dedicated U-turn lane over by US 17. That's something that we can do to really provide some additional access to people in the neighborhoods since they won't be able to turn left in or out of their neighborhood. Having that free flow U-turn allows them to get to the other side of the road without having to go through the US 17 interchange. And we're also looking at adding an interchange at Pine Grove. So let's go through some of these short-term alternatives that we had presented to the public. We have four of them. The first was trying to maintain the signal at Pine Grove Drive. In order to do that, we would have to widen 204 early. The next one is closing both medians and making some improvements to the US 17 off-ramp. The third alternative would be closing those medians, but also adding that U-turn I talked about at US 17 is shown here to allow people to have better access to the neighborhoods. And finally, we looked at a fourth alternative that we called D, where we did all the things in the last alternative, but we also added these acceleration-deceleration lanes that the public was so interested in, and doing that as a way to improve safety. We went ahead and analyzed the differences between these alternatives. The later alternatives there, you can see, have a higher safety benefit as we close those intersections, reduce those conflict points, and add those acceleration-deceleration lanes. We're also looking at a medium reduction in overall delay with the removal of that signal, but we are looking at small increases in travel time for the neighborhoods there for both Ford Ave and Pine Grove. So we're looking at a higher cost with widening and also a higher cost with adding those acceleration-deceleration lanes. So after hearing from the public, meeting with stakeholders, we decided to just move forward with Alternative D. With Alternative A, we found that leaving the signal there, we're not really reducing crash frequency and severity, which is a big issue on this corridor. And also leaving the signal will cause increasing congestion as the traffic volumes increase over these next 25 years. And this also has less desirable access to the Ford Ave Road intersection than the other alternatives. With the second alternative, it doesn't reduce crash frequency and severity as much as the others, and it also has less desirable access for the side roads. Same thing with Alternative C. So we've decided to move forward with the alternative that closes the medians, improves the off-ramp, adds that U-turn lane, and adds the acceleration-deceleration lanes. And this is going to be our short-term alternative that we're looking to implement on a shorter-term timeframe. We also looked at three long-term alternatives. These are ones that are really prepared for traffic within the next 25 years as that continues to increase. The first one closes the intersections and then has a full widening without some of the other improvements. The next one has the widening along the corridor, closing the medians, adding the U-turn, and adding the acceleration-deceleration lanes. And this is really including all of those improvements that we're providing in the short-term alternative, but adding that widening for the additional traffic we're expecting. And finally, we looked at an interchange at Pine Grove Drive, and this allows traffic in that neighborhood to access both sides of the roadway, but it would involve replacing bridges over the railroads and building a new bridge over Pine Grove Drive. We did a comparison of these alternatives. We're seeing a higher safety benefit with alternatives K and L with some of those additional improvements. We are seeing a large reduction in overall delay for all of these alternatives. Because we're removing the signal, because we're adding the widening, providing that additional capacity, we're definitely seeing a big reduction in delay if compared with the no build, compared if we didn't make any improvements at all along 204. Looking at the impacts, we're definitely seeing higher impacts with the interchange alternative. To be able to construct that and construct the ramps, we're looking at 5 to 7 displacements compared with no displacements in the other alternatives. And we're definitely looking at higher costs with the interchange alternative. So looking at all these, we decided to move forward with analyzing both the widening with the acceleration-deceleration lanes and the interchange alternative. The first one doesn't reduce crash frequency and severity as much as the other alternatives, and there's also not as good access to the neighborhoods because it doesn't include those acceleration lanes and it doesn't provide that additional access with the interchange. Listening to the public, they definitely are really interested in, looking at every other potential alternative. So we wanted to look at every other potential option that would be available. So that included, partial widening of 204, converting some of these existing intersections to R-cuts. We found there would still be a good bit of delay with that and wouldn't have as big a safety improvement. We also looked at some, potential connection alternatives, being able to connect the Grove Point neighborhood on the south with potential US 17 or with bridges across the railroad. We found those would have really large impacts to the neighborhoods and commercial areas and also wouldn't really improve travel times as well as our other alternatives. We also looked at some potential at-grade crossings of the railroad, which could have really major safety impacts and some potential crossings underneath the railroad, but those would cost a lot and wouldn't have huge benefit. And we also got some feedback from the public about potentially reconnecting Lakeshore Drive, the neighborhood on the north side of 204, with King George Boulevard, but that would also cause a large number of impacts. So finally, you know, we've had this discussion with you. So Tommy's going to talk a little bit about our next steps. Yes. Certainly.
Oh, one of the questions that that I've got is when looking at the land uses with regards to future impact, have you looked at the amount of activity that has taken place out in that area that needs to utilize 204? I mean, the amount of proposed development out there is unbelievable, and I'm hoping that you have updated your land use to account for the amount of development activity, i.e. number of units that in land that's being proposed to be developed.
We actually updated our traffic volumes from what we presented back in August to account for that still, you know, high development going on out there in that area.
I would suggest that you look at it again, because since August there's been additional activity. So if you could factor that in, that would be great. The other thing is looking at the acceleration and deceleration lanes that you're proposing, what's the length of those? Because they appear to be pretty short.
We're working through that now at an engineering level, and we will have more detailed concept layouts to present to the public in July is when we're planning to go back out to the public.
I think it
so
would
we
be
are,
helpful.
We are looking at that from an engineering and safety perspective, and
I think it would be helpful if possible if you had some cars to kind of give people an idea about what the stacking and how much time they've got to either get on and off of the road, because if you tell somebody it's 50 feet or 100 feet, they don't know. They know based on if they see small cars or whatever, but I do want to make sure that they have a good understanding about what's being proposed.
Yeah, we are proposing the standard acceleration, deceleration lengths that you would typically have on a freeway.
I understand that. I'm just giving you feedback from what I hear. I think that in some cases, depending on what the speed is on the road, there's not enough length. And that's something that really needs to be factored in, especially as you look at the amount of development activity that's taken place out in that area.
But we do have to be careful with that, because sometimes if you make that acceleration length too long, people get complacent, thinks it's a through lane. If it's not, you don't want them hanging out there too long and then having them to merge over at the very
I agree with you totally. I just want, it's probably more the deceleration more so than the acceleration, it's just kind of taking a look at it so that, and make it so that the public has a really clear idea about what it is that they're looking at with regards to having small cars, you know, just so that they have an idea.
That's a good point.
All right. Really the last thing we're going to cover is, you know, we're taking feedback from this meeting. We're talking to our key stakeholder partners, especially GDOT, and emergency services is a big, consideration in what we're proposing. And then we're planning to go out, to the public tentatively in July. That may slip a little bit. Don't want to totally commit to that. And then finalize our recommendations right after we are able to receive those comments and see if we have anything new there in those comments and finish this up by September. Any other questions?
I just have a very quick question. What is the coordination between this study and the US-17? Because they are recommending a DDI at the State Route 204 at US-17, and you are recommending like underneath U-turn, right? So, I mean, what is the coordination between those two? I mean,
we have met several times and have been exchanging data and working together and checking each other's work to a certain extent. The DDI doesn't interfere at all with what we're proposing. And the U-turn under US 17 can remain, even if you build the DDI. You can make the argument by putting in the DDI that U-turn is still pretty easy, but you still would have to go through signals. So we would recommend that the U-turn capability continue with a DDI, you know, but that's someone else to work out in the long term. Go ahead. So, anything else?
No other questions. Thank y'all so much.
We thank you. It.
Thank you.
Great. Up next, we've got our information reports.
Hello. I would just talk about this very, very fast. Because I mean, recently, we actually had a GAMPO meeting, and then GDOT indicated that they were for every time we do a long range transportation plan update, we have to develop the socioeconomic data, existing year and the current year and the projection. And then we always have, we don't have like staff members to do that. So now GDOT decided they would take care of the socioeconomic data, development. We welcome that, but we also at the same time, we know because of Hyundai, because of a lot of developments, we have a lot of jurisdictions that approve subdivisions, that actually create traffic and then dump the traffic on the major roadways. So we actually want to compile some information. I know that the city of Savannah, Chatham County, CAD, you always provide status report. I think last time actually Port Wentworth also provided some information about their like zoning changes, land use changes, or subdivisions. So we want to keep track of that. So when GDOT develops the socioeconomic data, and we have something to validate, and if they're missing something, so we really want to keep track of that. So Anna developed this template. We are requesting, we are asking you for input on this so that we can keep track of those developments, for social income data development. That is for one reason. Another reason is because recently it has brought to our attention Pooler and FEM County both have Quaker Road improvement projects, left in between 1.3 miles. Then nobody, that's going to create a bottleneck, but they are not coordinating with each other. So we are thinking since the MPO is the coordination place, so when you document your project over there and that will brought to our attention and we can probably, start like coordination meeting or something to get those resolved. So that's the basis for creating this, the information status report. So, we are just asking for your input, but if Melanie and Anna wants to.
I just want to say, in addition to that, we have to keep up with this data anyway because we have to report it to the census. So if you, in your jurisdictions, can talk with your staff that work on dealing with subdivision review and rezonings that might include multifamily, if you could just make sure that we get the project number, the number of proposed units, so that we can keep put it in our database, it makes it easier for us to do the reporting. That we have to do as part of our process.
Yeah, we also want to probably have some kind of like project separate them out eventually. If the highway project, transit project, bike path projects, that will help us to update the non-motorized transportation plan, keep up with the implementation status, and also for CAT, so they know where they need to provide services. So we just want to coordinate with all of these efforts. Okay, thank you.
I'm a little confused. I apologize. So is this the list for capital projects? Is this the list for like subdivisions and, you know?
All kinds of projects that is going on in your area.
The simple answer to this is, and this was just put together pretty quickly. If you've got capital projects that you've got ongoing, then you can create, you know, a list that says I've got a capital project that's starting at point A, point B. This is primarily dealing with a lot of the projects that, that are the subdivisions, rezonings, you know, different types of development that, impact, like projects like what's going on right now. But in your case, if you've got capital, work going on, that would be helpful just to kind of know what the status of things are. just so that we can keep up with what's happening. And we'll make sure that we share this list. The other reason that we wanted, at least that I've been pushing to make sure that we do a little bit more of this, is that as we go into areas where, you know, Savannah's been annexing pretty aggressively into areas where you might come up against the pool, or you might come up against, you know, Garden City or Bloomingdale, if we know that there are projects that are either proposed or going on, we can at least try to figure out how to smooth those connections out to have some consistency with regards to the road network when there are subdivisions that are impacting the road, you know, the roads in those areas. So in your case, the capital, everybody else's case, you know, if you've got big projects and stuff and you want to share it with us, fine, but we really want to keep up with the development activity that's going on in your jurisdictions.
Will there be any communication of this with Pooler, Garden City?
Yes.
Yes, we already get some information from the Pooler staff. I've been talking with them, as well as from Garden City. What we're trying to do is get it in a consistent format, so that the ultimate goal will be to share this with everybody, so you know if somebody has something going on in an area close to an area that you're responsible for. That way you can have a conversation with them before the impact hits you. That's really important, because there have been a number of projects that have occurred where, you know, city and the county, is good that you're sitting beside Michelle, where there have been projects where, you know, the city's annexed, but its impact is something that the county was doing. And either neither one of you knew about it, or you had another division or another office that was working on it. So we're just trying to figure out how to have it better coordinated, so people know what's happening. By the time we find out, sometimes stuff's been done and there's a problem, and people are coming to us to try to figure out how to fix it or offer suggestions of the cure.
Are you guys going to share these page by emails, and that way we can fill it up? Paul Winford has been tracking all the projects, so I already have all the lists with units and all that stuff I could transfer to this list.
Yes, we can definitely make sure that we do this. This was just kind of put up for example, kind of only of kind of like the layout that we're going to be asking you to provide us the information in. If you don't have, like, you might not have all of the funding information, that's okay. But yeah, it definitely is going to help us.
Yeah, we just want to prevent the, like, Kwaku Road situation where we learn everything from Savannah Morning News. So I mean, this is the coordination place. So if we already know that, we would have started coordination, but if we didn't know that they have like two separate projects, and then they created 1.3 mile bottleneck. So. Yeah, we will share this so that it can help us finalize the format and so that you can start and then we will send it to everybody so that you can provide the information at next meeting.
Thanks.
Thank you.
GDOT project status.
Okay, for pre-construction projects, we have twin projects 704 and 705. That's the major widening and the bridge replacement over on State Route 404 over Back River. And the next milestone is PFPR. It's anticipated in April. The next one is bridge replacement at Bull River and the bridge replacements over Lazaretta Creek. They both have the next milestone as PFPR also, and waiting on environmental. The roundabout, 18023, State Route 30, Hodgefield Road. The next milestone is PFPR also. The safety improvements project, 1515. One is anticipated in November of 25. That's for the FFPR. And there's a grade separation on State Route 307. 20282, the next milestone is concept approval. They're currently holding state stakeholder outreach and early concept activities. And for active construction, the innovative projects 12757 is at 86%, 13727 is at 99%. They're just doing punch list items. 13741 is at 90%, and 13742, that's State Route 25 at Middle River, and that one will be open to traffic Monday. 7128 is at 75%. 6328 is at 89%. 521855 is 24%, and 6700 is 79%. And the roundabout supplemental agreement was completed in March, and they're just waiting on some contract orders to go through.
The Islands Rex Expressway Bridge has been going on for 8 years. Since 2017. Really? Okay.
What is it?
The Islands Expressway, this one, number 6. Yeah, so starting 2017. Now it's 2025.
When did it? Was it not 17?
8 years already?
No, I think that's right.
Really? Oh my goodness. Okay. And it's still 75%.
Yeah. What's that? That one's got a anticipated completion of Q1 28. I see it's not, or 28, 26 or.
Okay. So it will open next year then?
I think so. Okay, that's okay. The plan.
Okay. Okay.
Up next, Chatham County. I-16 at Jimmy DeLoach Parkway Interchange and Chevis Road Improvements are both working towards right-of-way authorization. Girard Avenue Improvements, we've got most of our documents together to complete right-of-way authorization, so I'll have that to you guys soon. Green Island Road Path, we're working towards concept report approval on that project. Just got updates on State Route 25 and State Route 204. The President Street at Truman Railroad study is complete. I will get that report posted to the website if it isn't already, as well as the Safe Streets for All Safety Action Plan that's also complete for us, and that one is on the website already. And then local projects, those are all moving along steadily. And the US 80 sidewalk project, that one is currently under construction, and Quaco Road widening project is currently out for bid. Any questions on Chatham projects? All right. Okay. Up next is City of Savannah.
And I'm just going to hit the high points. Kinley Horn for Project Duren 8358 has developed a concept, concept designs for operational improvements at Montgomery Street and White Bluff Road. And a public meeting to share the concepts and request feedback is tentatively scheduled for May. De Lesseps Avenue is 69% complete. APAC has completed construction on the final surface from Waters to Costa Rica. Additional paving from Costa Rica to Cuba is nearly complete. Truman Phase 2B is construction remains on schedule for completion in June of 2026. And work is ongoing now between Reuben Clark and East 52nd Street. Middle Ground Road tied to town. Preliminary concept design, field surveys, and archaeological studies began in February and are ongoing. And the I-16 ramp removal project, GDOT's moving forward with IMR, and the city was awarded $1.8 million through the Reconnecting Communities Grant, and we are currently working with GDOT on an MOA for concept design and a couple of other items.
Where are we for the 37th SS4A?
That one was not on my list. I think it's, I think that it might be. There might be questionable at this point.
Oh, okay.
I think we're in a holding pattern.
Chatham Area Transit.
Okay, so for the ferry boat maintenance facility and the ferry dock, those bids are about to close this month, and we hope to go to the board in May for approval of those. I know there were some questions about the funding gap on the Riverside dock. We're working with our partners at the Savannah Waterfront CID to identify some possible funding sources to help close that gap. The paratransit maintenance facility, the site selection, our board approved the 14 interchange drive, and so they've authorized us to move forward with the acquiring that property, and we're working on the ramp documents for that. We've also begun the NEPA process and meeting with the FTA for that environmental work. On note, we awarded two low no emission grants last fiscal year, the bus replacement and the low emitting ferry program. We were encouraged by FTA to continue moving on with those projects. We have been approved for the marine electric charging stations. That process is complete. We just need to execute that grant, and we did submit to move forward with the replacement for the battery electric buses, but that has not gone through its final approval yet. The American Rescue Plan, that's a planning document. We're just waiting for the scope on that one. And then the ITS, we met with our vendor. They have completed the design on that, and we hope to have that installed on our two new ferries by summer. And speaking of the two new ferries, they have been delivered, and we are having a launching in conjunction with the convention center on April 30th. So I hope you guys can all come out and go on board and see our beautiful two new hybrid electric ferries.
So what happened to the old ones?
We have four existing ferries in our fleet, and so we will be keeping those ferries. Some of them have not ended their useful life, and so we're looking at what we can do to make sure they can be maintained until they end their useful life. But now that we have the two new ferries, we can take the ones that need some tender loving care out of service and get those back up and operational.
Savannah Hilton Head International Airport.
Nobody online, okay.
City of Port Wentworth.
Okay, the list that I provide this time is kind of pretty much the same project that we were talking about last meeting. The fire station, we have set the ribbon cut on June 12th. The Ice Cove and amphitheater, we start pouring the slab as yesterday. The City Hall expansion is still on track for be finished in October. As a part of the streetscape vision plan, Public Works is still cleaning up the Highway 21. The comprehensive plan, the updated comprehensive plan should be completed by next month.
Are you doing the comprehensive plan update in-house?
Or? Yes, we hired Pond. That's the architect. Yeah, okay. We can share those once it's complete. We can share it with you guys.
Okay, great. Thank you.
And with the development service, on the month of February, we did 160 permits. And the 4 months that we actually add on the year, we have estimate cost on construction $64 million, and inspection is almost 400 inspection. That's it. Thanks.
Thank you. Anybody, Georgia Port?
We don't have anybody from Georgia Port. Okay.
And then I guess LATS is the next one that's on here. Does anybody else have any updates?
Well, they didn't send us the written report. LATS did send us written reports, but we also have like all the jurisdictions listed over here just in case. I mean, we will send them that format so they can fill the information next time. But I mean, we still list them over here so they can report. what's happening.
Effingham County, I'll say something quickly. I'm sorry I didn't provide a report. I was out for a good chunk with my new daughter, so I'm happy to be back. Everyone's good there. Just briefly, I know this has been a long meeting. Effingham County, we approved the change order, or not the change order, but the funds to support the change order for Effingham Parkway with GDOT. So we're excited about getting that change order shored up. And I think tentatively, it's looking like April of 26, Effingham Parkway will be open from Gateway to 30, and then it'll be July from Blue Jay down to Gateway Parkway. So we'll see where the change order plays out, but that's tentatively those dates. And then Effingham County, we did change our freight network. We added Blue Jay Road and Sand Hill and McCall Road. So that will help facilitate freight network or freight traffic to 80, which will impact, you know, some of the traffic that's there. So kind of, you know, trucks have already been using that, but we're officially bringing that onto our listed freight network.
So they're designated as freight routes?
That's right.
Okay, new freight, okay.
And construction's currently happening on Blue Jay Road to get that up to par, and same with McCall. So we're excited. There's a lot of resurfacing that is happening in Effingham County. I think this is the most that has ever happened in Effingham County, and that's thanks to T-SPLOS and S-SPLOS, and also the LMIG and LMIG supplemental from state. So super excited to see a lot of that you know, go into place. We do have a lot of intersection plans in the works right now, a lot of roundabouts, and we are finishing up our bike pedestrian master plan. I was able to submit that to the BOC for comments in a workshop. So I'm anticipating formalizing the adoption of that within the next month, which we'll share with the MPO once that gets approved. The other thing that we're working on right now is the master transportation plan with Pond, and we're hoping to maybe get that shored up and adopted within the next 2 to 3 months. But we'll see how that progresses.
Okay.
That's a short synopsis for Effingham County.
Thank you. Anybody else have any reports that weren't listed? All right.
Okay.
Where it notices, I wanted to highlight two things. GDOT does have another supplemental LMIG this year, so definitely for resurfacing, be sure to apply for that. And then the SS4A NOFO is currently out. So let's see, GAMPO presentation.
I attached the presentation from GAMPO. So basically for GDOT, I already mentioned they're going to do the SE data. And then they also talked about the steep development schedule. So we're in line. So we will have our new TIP developed by the end of next fiscal year. We will still start kick our call for projects probably in August. And there's another AMPO also did a presentation over here. They actually have outlined all the schedules, all the things that happened since the new administration, right? All these new executive orders, what has changed. So actually included in this presentation, if you'd be interested.
Thank you very much. And that is it for today's meeting. Thank you all so much. We will see you. The next meeting is going to be on a Wednesday, so definitely make sure to note that on your calendars on June 18th. Thank you.